Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Colmena Seguros presenta una historia imparable.
Cuando uno de mis trabajadores sufrió un accidente en la empresa, sentí miedo. Pensaba en él, en su familia y en todo lo que podía pasar. Pero la verdad, ese miedo duró poco, porque Colmena Seguros estuvo a nuestro lado, guiándonos y acompañándonos para que la recuperación fuera más rápida. Hoy mi empresa sigue adelante, con la tranquilidad y respaldo de Colmena.
Colmena Seguros, la aseguradora de las empresas que no paran de salir adelante.
Vigilado Superintendencia Financiera de Colombia. Colmena Seguros, una empresa de Fundación Grupo Social.
Welcome back to another episode of Not Even D2, the podcast covering Division III sports through interviews with those involved in Division III. Today, we have a great guest, Dan Cook, who is the first player in Empire 8 history to win 4 consecutive years Player of the Year. Just reflect on that for a little bit. But before we get more into him, I want to talk about the Division III season, which just ended this past weekend. On the women's side, NYU finished a perfect season, 31-0. They won a national championship. Congrats to them. They were just loaded from the start. I had some doubts about them going into the Transylvania game, but from the jump, they just were the better team, and that carried over into the championship game against Smith, where they defeated Smith 51-41. That team just had too many great pieces, a couple key transfers added to their team from last year, and led by a great coach and Meg Barber. So again, congrats to them. I know they're working hard and getting right back into it. On the men's side, number 13 seed Trine defeated number 1 seed Hampden Sydney in the championship game. And in the D3 community, I don't think anybody had Trine making it to that far in the playoffs or winning that game. So definitely respect them being the underdogs and coming away with the win. They also had a historic run. You know, in the Elite Eight, they won on a buzzer beater in overtime. And then in the Final Four, they beat the number 3 seed, Trinity, and finished the year beating the number 1 seed in Hampden Sydney. So be sure to stay tuned. Not Even D2 is going to have a coach or a player from some of those teams on episodes coming up. So congrats to all who won the national championship. I know it feels good, but the work begins now for the 24-25 season. I can't wait to keep covering Division III. You know, you don't really see some of the stories or some of the competitive battles that I get to see every day covering Division III. Back to Dan Cook. Like I said, 4-time player of the year. You hate saying this about someone who's defeated you more than you've defeated them, but what I like most about him is no matter how good he got, how many awards he won, you know, player of the year, all Americans, he always kept the same head on his shoulders, never got too high on himself. Just a really great guy, which I think you guys are going to see throughout this interview. We cover a lot with him, you know, transferring from Hobart to Fisher after his freshman year, what it was like playing at Fisher, some of their runs in the Empire tournaments, and stay tuned to hear what Dan Cook has in store next. So appreciate you guys for tuning in to another episode, and I hope you enjoy. All right, I'm here with Dan Cook and Neruda. How you guys feeling today?
Pretty good, man. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, appreciate you.
Appreciate you joining the pod, bro. Really appreciate it.
For sure.
Yes, sir. So, season's over. You're in grad school. What's life like for Dan right now?
Yeah, I'm working, trying to figure out some new hobbies and passions to fill some free time now that basketball's done. just enjoying life.
Word. I read online that you played golf in high school, so I'm kind of wondering if you've been to the driving range and what are you shooting right now?
Yeah, I actually just got a new pair of clubs after the season was over to celebrate. So nice. Yeah, I haven't gotten out yet down in Florida, but back home I got a couple of times, so it was pretty fun.
Yeah, what are you shooting on a 9?
My handicap's like 14. I'm nothing special, but okay. That's probably gonna be the new thing for me now that basketball's over. Is trying to focus on that.
Respect it. Mm-hmm. But let's get into it. So you're from Rochester, ton of great teams and talent over there. You know, some people might say that Section 5 is the best section in the state. You got great players that have come out of Rochester, Isaiah Stewart, Thomas Bryant, to name a few. So talk about what it was like growing up in Rochester and playing in that environment.
Yeah, I mean, it was really cool just be able to see guys that were just so talented and obviously ended up making the league. And I was fortunate enough to go to high school with Isaiah Stewart for a little bit and just kind of see his work ethic and just kind of see the player that he became through the years. And that was probably a big thing in my development, just seeing the work he put in behind the scenes that I would see going to high school with him.
Yeah. Did he went to Pittsburgh Mendon?
No, he went to Clay. I transferred to Pittsburgh Mendon my junior high school.
Oh, okay. Where? Mm-hmm. What was the reason for that transfer?
Most of my close friends went to Mendon, and that's pretty much the main reason.
that makes some sense.
Yeah.
Who was one of the best players that you played against in high school?
Played against in high school. I played against Roddy Gale. I don't know if you're familiar with him. He played loose to Porter. Yeah. And now he's on Ohio State. He's pretty good. He was a freshman when I was a senior. So that says something for how good he is. He's probably the best.
Word. So at Pittsburgh Mendon in your senior year, you led the team to a Section 5 title, runner up in the state finals. You averaged 20 points and 14 rebounds, which led you to win All Greater Rochester Player of the Year. So obviously you had a great high school career. What was the recruitment process like for you coming out of high school, and what were you thinking trying to find your next spot for the next 4 years?
Yeah. So growing up being younger, as I'm sure like most Hoopers were like, I was trying to go to the highest level possible. Like just loved being in the gym. And then at a certain point, I kind of got burned out a little bit, started testing out some different sports. And then coming back to my junior high school, I kind of started getting more into basketball again. Got recruited by a lot of D3 schools, a lot of UAA and NESCAC schools were kind of like where I was talking to. And then I never really played AAU, travel AAU in high school. I just didn't really like the car rides and stuff, so I kind of stayed close to home. So that was something about me that was probably a little bit not the smartest when it came to recruiting. And then in our states run my senior year, I ended up getting a offer to Albany. And then other than that, I just got a couple D2s and then a lot of D3s.
Yeah, so you got offered to UAlbany. What held you back from choosing there and sticking to Division III?
Yeah, so that was a redshirt full ride offer, which is really cool. And I was, like, really grateful to have the opportunity to even, play there. But at that time in high school, I wasn't really planning on playing college basketball. High school basketball was, like, so great for me. Like, I had such a good time. I didn't think it would get any better. So that, and on top of that, I was just kind of – more of a local guy, and I like staying close to home. And if I was going to play in college, I kind of wanted to have a big impact at a smaller school where I know I would get playing time.
So you talk about that like burnt out feeling, how you were kind of done with college basketball, but yet you still committed to Hobart for your freshman year. So talk about your mindset and like what were you thinking going into it?
Yeah, I think the main reason I committed to Hobart was just the coach there, Stefan Thompson. Speak really high praise of him. Just one of the best coaches I've ever had. A really great person on top of that. And he just recruited me really heavily. Would write me handwritten letters every week. Came to all my games my senior year. And just was always there for me when I had, had questions and was really patient with me. Versus like some of the bigger schools that like, UAAs, they would kind of pressure me trying to say I had to commit early decision and then stuff like that. And they would say I had a spot later in the year anyways. And I just kind of respected that he would just have my back like that.
What were your kind of first? So obviously you had a really good freshman year, averaged 9.2 points per game, 5 rebounds, 1 assist. So what was your first impressions of Division III basketball, and what were some of your growing pains and adjustments, if any?
Yeah, I think I had a pretty successful freshman year for a freshman, but
yeah,
one of the biggest things was just the physicality of it all. And I honestly thought that I was going to be better than I was. There was a little bit of arrogance that got quickly humbled, which I was appreciative of because I think it made me work harder throughout college. But yeah, just the physicality and the fact that like D3 Hoopers are legit, you know, you don't hear about a lot of them. So it's really cool that you guys are doing the podcast like this, because there's a lot of guys out there who are just really talented and could go at higher levels.
Yeah, appreciate that. Let's get a little more into your career at Hobart. You started 25 out of 26 games. And like Ruta just mentioned, your stats, but your team made it to the Sweet 16, but the season was canceled due to COVID. So talk about your first year a little bit more and why you eventually thought you had to leave to Fisher from Hobart after such a successful first year.
Yeah, that year was really fun. We didn't win our conference that year. Luckily, we had beaten some really good ranked teams like NYU and stuff like that, which got us an at-large bid. And then we got to play Jim Calhoun's team, St. Joe's, in the first round. And then we got to play a really talented Springfield team that had probably the best D3 basketball player I've ever played against. I forgot his name. He was a four-time All-American. His name was Joe something, but he was phenomenal. And he torched me in the first half, about 20 points on me. So, you know, it's just cool. I mean, there's just good guys out there. But, yeah, going to that run, we were down in Crisper, Newport News, Virginia. COVID hit day before our game, came back. It was a little sad because I thought we'd make a little bit longer of a run. But yeah, the next year when I ended up transferring to Fisher, I started my first semester of my sophomore year at Hobart. And then I ended up transferring to Fisher because they weren't having a season at Hobart that year. And I didn't know if I was going to take the extra year eligibility at the time. And I kind of wanted to just make the most of my basketball career.
Yeah. How did that kind of work out, you going to Fisher, entering the portal? What is that feeling like entering a new team, and like, what were your emotions during that time?
Yeah. I mean, it's a intimidating and interesting feeling entering a new team. Cause obviously you don't want to step on any toes, but you have your own goals and you know what kind of player you are. But luckily, like all my teammates at Fisher at the time were super welcoming. Coach G was super welcoming and they always kind of embraced me being on the team. We ended up having a pretty good year that year.
I wanted to ask a little bit more about that year. Obviously, you talked about how your teammates and coaches were really helpful in your process to transitioning to Fisher. And you guys had a really good year. You guys made it to the championship of the Empire 8, obviously in a COVID season, but still, nonetheless, a championship berth. Talk about that season.
Yeah, that season was unique. Probably one of my favorite seasons in basketball, just because I was so grateful to have it, because it was kind of an unknown at the time. And it was really cool just to see like everyone enjoy it more. Cause obviously you guys know, like there's a lot of growing pains throughout the season of basketball and there's guys complaining throughout the year. And there really wasn't much of that year, which was pretty cool. And then, you know, sadly you guys beat us that year, but it was just a really good experience overall, getting adjusted to the conference. And just kind of getting to see that, like, you know, the Empire 8 is a lot better than I expected.
Yeah. Talking more about the Empire 8, you know, I got stories to tell about every team around the conference. Ruta has stories to tell. You got stories to tell. But there's no rivalry quite like the Battle of the Beaks, the rivalry between St. John Fisher and Nazareth. So talk a little about what that rivalry is like and like what your emotions are during the whole day. Do you guys look forward to that game more than others? Like, let's hear about that rivalry.
Yeah, I mean, that rivalry game's obviously really fun. I mean, I don't think many D3 teams can be able to experience that kind of atmosphere with that many fans. So that's pretty special while playing at Fisher and Naz, is that rivalry. But yeah, it's a game I definitely look forward to, but at the same time kind of dread, because it's one of those things where you get anxious the whole day leading up to it. But yeah, as soon as the tip-off starts, it's such a fun feeling and exciting.
Yeah, what's been your favorite memory from that battle?
Probably when we beat them last year in the conference finals. Obviously, like, I never won a conference championship before, so that was pretty cool. You know, all the individual awards kind of are a fleeting feeling. You know, they feel good for a moment. But something like that, doing things as a team, through all the sacrifice and hard work you put together, it's a pretty great feeling.
Yeah. One thing that I read about that rivalry is that you guys are actually fundraising money for a children's hospital. So much more respect for that rivalry. And I know how much, like, when the Battle of Beaks comes up, everybody around the league, girls and boys, are like, oh, we got to tune into that game, see what's going on. So definitely looks like a crazy atmosphere.
Yeah,
but for sure. I want to transition into one of your games that year. against Buffalo State, you had 47 points. So take me through that day. Like, was there anything, did you feel any certain way? And why were you so dominant in that game?
Yeah, I mean, that day, it was right before Thanksgiving. So I don't really remember anything but kind of dreading it, because I kind of wanted to go home, to be honest, if I'm being completely real. I didn't feel any certain type of way that game. But honestly, they played one-on-one defense the whole time, and it didn't really do much help side. So I remember saying to Brendan Trappery the first few points of the game, like, it's your game, dude. Like, go off. And then ended up kind of turning over to me and just kind of got flowing.
Yeah. You had 47 points, 17 of 23 from the field, but you missed 9 free throws, not to bring it up. But no, you could have had a 50 ball. What was going on?
Yeah, I think that was the first thing that everyone said to me after the game, which was totally okay and fair. Free throws are a little bit of a battle for me sometimes, especially that year. So, yeah, I think I was a little mad because, like, the one game I shoot so many free throws, I couldn't make them all. So it is what it is. But, yeah, that definitely pains me a little bit.
I wanted to ask you a quick question. What does your, like, pregame preparation look like? Are you watching film before games? Are you scouting? Or what does that look like for you?
So I watch a lot of my own film. I'm not huge on watching, like, the other team's film past what the coaches do. Otherwise, I just don't like to think about the game all day. Just kind of like to be in my zone. But yeah, pregame in the past wasn't really too much. Just kind of like to, like, hang out, goof around, because I don't like to stress about the game too much. But then going into last year and this year especially, I would hit the weight room before games, and that was really huge for me. Just doing a lot of ISOs, trying to get my body right, some hangs, just trying to get my posture all good. Just because I'm getting old and my knees are starting to hurt me and stuff. But yeah, that's pretty much it.
Word. Yeah. Word. Let's take a quick break real quick. All right, we're back. I want to talk about your senior year. You guys end up winning the Empire 8 championship, but for the second semester, you were without two all-conference players, Brendan Trappery, who was first team all-conference, fourth leading scorer in the Empire 8, so really good player, and then Sean Williams, who was former defensive player of the year, third team all-conference, really one of the best defenders I've ever played against. So what was that initial feeling when you guys lose those two key players on Fisher? And then how were you guys able to overcome that and still win the Empire Championship?
Yeah, first it was a pretty intimidating feeling. Like you said, two really talented players who were fifth-year veterans at the time. So not only were they skilled, they also had some experience that we were lacking from the guys that stepped up that year. So at first, yeah, it was a little scary. We were like, what are we going to do? The season might not end well. And then we got a really big win against Naz in a game that I didn't really play well against, and a lot of other guys stepped up. So we kind of got a little bit of a roll going there. And then we lost to Alfred, which was a humbling experience too. I think we lost to you guys twice that year. And then after that, we kind of like regrouped. Everyone kind of just said, like, we're going to give it our all, and it ended up working out good for us.
Yeah, what were, like, the main adjustments do you think there was in the locker room? Like, was everybody just saying, I'm going to do this? Or talk to me about what the locker room was actually doing or saying to get through that and win that Empire Championship.
Yeah, I think one of the hardest things about college basketball, and I'm sure you guys share the same feeling, is, like, pretty much everyone on a college basketball team was their best player in their high school team. So when you go to college and you have to have that adjustment period where you're like, oh, shoot, I'm not going to be shooting the most shots, or I'm not going to be on the floor for 35 minutes a game. It's hard for a lot of guys to have, first off, good attitudes, and then also embracing the role of being the hustle guy that they've never been. So that year, I think the really important thing for our team was the guys that stepped up into the new roles. They really just embraced what they had to do to a T, and that was probably the biggest reason we won.
You were obviously a senior that year, and I'm sure guys look up to you with, you know, as you're, you know, like a All-American and really good player. So what were kind of your words of advice to any, like, the kids who were inexperienced in the locker room?
Yeah, my biggest advice was just, you know, I'm a pretty positive person overall, especially, like, on the floor. I don't really believe, like, you know, if someone messes up, it's best to yell at them right in the moment instead of pulling them aside a couple minutes later and letting them know what's up. So as a veteran on the team, that's what I would try to do, especially with the young guys, because, you know, they get worried about getting taken out of the game. You know, if they play bad, they're not going to give them a chance the next game. I'm sure you guys know how it goes. Like, you know, when you're a young player, your coaches are a little less lenient on you. So that's what I'll try to do with the younger guys, especially. And then kind of just like embracing, like when you make a mistake, make up for it. You know, if you turn the ball over, be the first one back on defense. You know, don't soak your head. Don't complain to the refs. Things like that, which are so easy to do and I've done as well, you know, are just important when it comes to the basketball game. And not only that, but just like life in general.
So obviously after that championship, you guys went to the NCAA tournament, then won a game, and then you guys lost a really good Swarthmore team in the mm-hmm. second round. What was your decision to go back to Fisher after like a decorated four-year college career?
Yeah, at first I wasn't going to. It kind of seemed to be a trend with me in basketball. I kind of always try to go away and then to pull me right back. But yeah, after like a month or so of thinking I wasn't going to do it, two of my best friends came back for 5 years, Matt Panera and Jack Foley. And then I just kind of missed the camaraderie of basketball. And I thought, you know, I'll never have an experience like this again. I don't really have any goals of playing overseas. And luckily I had some good mentors from like my high school who played basketball and some former friends who just told me, like, you're never going to get that same kind of camaraderie outside of college sports like that. So.
Word. I respect that big time. So in the year that you guys, after the COVID year, the 2021-2022 year, you guys played University of Buffalo and you had 12 points against a Division I team. So it made me and KJ want to ask you if you ever had any thoughts about seeing if you could play at like at a higher level during your college career at Fisher or Hobart.
Yeah, so playing against UV is a pretty cool experience. I had a good game against them. I think I was one of the leading scorers that game, which is pretty cool. Just for my own personal, like, you know, from like a ball out with the best of them. Actually, beginning of this year, I had a friend who was a GA at New Mexico State. And I got a place on the team because they lost one of their guys to be their backup big this year, which was pretty cool. But it was just a lot. It was like right when our season was about to start. I'd have to move out in a week to New Mexico. I wasn't really like sure that'd be the place I want to go to. But yeah, I've gotten some interest over the years. Mexico was the only place that I actually like would have had a spot on. But yeah, I think I just like D3 because I just feel like I can make more of an impact.
Yeah. One thing I'm thinking about, you know, you got interest in the back of your head. You win player of the year. The next year, obviously, teams are focused in on you. What were you kind of working on throughout the off seasons to keep elevating your game?
Definitely my jump shot. Like I knew that was my weakest point of my game. Still was when I graduated. But yeah, I feel like this year I got more of a mid-range, which was helpful for me. Like a little bit of a mid-post bag and a little bit of a pull-up. And that kind of just helped me just spacing a little bit because, you know, obviously I'm sure you guys know from your coaches, pack the paint on me, don't let them drive type thing, make them shoot. So like I know my own weaknesses. I think that's part of the reason why I was able to be successful despite that is because like, I wouldn't try to get out of my comfort zone. And like when I did, it was when I knew I put in the work to do it.
Word. So you played in the EA and the Liberty League and also been to the NCAA tournament two times. Do you think that the EA is sometimes overlooked? Because I know we don't get like the national recognition from other, you know, D3 news outlets or media outlets. So kind of just talk about the EA and if you think it's underrated.
Yeah, I definitely think it's underrated. I think especially this year, the conference got so much better as a whole. Like teams like Cuca, they really stepped it up. Even Sage was pretty solid this year. Like you never really knew. Usually in the past, I feel like you always kind of knew you're going to womp on teams like that. But this year, like there's a couple times where like, my gosh, we might lose, which is, you know, good for them. But yeah, I think the eights was pretty top heavy and it still obviously is. But yeah, the top four teams in the eight, I mean, they end up usually winning a game in the tournament every year. So it's pretty good.
All right, so I got a few more questions, but the first one I think we're all looking to hear is your basketball career done or what's your career goals for Dan Cook?
Yeah, I'm hanging a towel up finally. My body's starting to hurt. I'm starting to feel like an old soul, and I'm kind of just ready to take on some new passions and hobbies.
Yeah, what do you plan on doing in life? Like, what's your interest or – what kind of fields are you trying to work in?
Yeah, so I currently work for a family company that's an engineering manufacturing firm, which I really enjoy doing. I've been doing pretty much my whole life. And then I'm going to do a marathon next year just to kind of challenge myself mentally. And then the really big hobby is just golf. So I'm really looking forward to getting into that a little more.
Sounds like a dope life, though.
Yeah, it could be worse.
One thing I wanted to ask you, you've played basketball for 5 years now at a very high level. And obviously now you're hanging the towel up. So what would be your biggest advice to a freshman coming into basketball this year, playing for a high level college team?
Yeah, I would say honestly, the biggest thing is just be humble. You know, there's so many good players in D3 and it's going to be a learning curve. And even if you are one of the better players, you got to deal with a lot of different egos and personalities and guys who are older than you and feel like they deserve shots. So I would say the best way to do it is just first off, play your game, do the little things. And especially honestly, just do the little things because no one needs you to come in and take shots right away, especially. People want to see what kind of teammate you are, especially for coaches. I'm sure you guys can attest to that. They don't, you know, every guy can make buckets in D3, but who's going to do the little things like take charges, get rebounds, play the best defense and things like that. And that's kind of how I got my role my freshman year starting was just doing the little things, getting rebounds, trying to play good defense, taking a lot of charges, just anything that I felt like the team was lacking in that I could help out with or effort things.
Yeah, really well said. And Ruta and I were talking with one of his teammates, Luke Pergolt, and we asked him the same type of question before. And basically the same exact answer is just do little things and your time will come. So definitely think people should hear that and really take it like 100%. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, easier said than done too, but for sure.
That's a fact. Before we get into the rapid fire and start five edition, you won player of the year 4 times in the Empire 8, first player to ever do that. What's been the most memorable or which one was most important to you?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's really cool to get those accomplishments. I think for me, like going into college, I didn't know anything about it. Like I didn't know there was conference teams. I didn't know there was player of the years. I didn't know any of that stuff. So when I first got it, you know, that was obviously felt really good. I feel like the last time probably felt the best just because I put the most every single year. As I got older, I put more work in every off season. And I feel like I started too late with that in that regard. Like, you know, in high school, I kind of, you know, I'm sure you guys came a little easier to you. Kind of got a little bit of an ego in that sense where you're like, oh, I don't need to try that hard in certain things. I don't need to work on my game as much. But when I got to college and I got around teammates like Ryan Gentile and Brendan Trapper, it really showed me the definition of what hard work is, especially when it comes to the skill part of the sport. And that I had been lacking in that regard. So I wish I had worked harder earlier, but at the same time, I feel like I put my time in.
Word. Good answer. We're going to end this episode with a little rapid fire and starting five edition. So let us know when you're ready for rapid fire.
Sounds good.
Okay, so first rapid fire question. What is your favorite restaurant in Rochester? I don't know if you have some NIL deals or anything like that or little partnerships, but really.
No, I got none of the sort. I'm a simple guy over here. Probably my best like fast food place is probably Hungry's. They got really good garbage plate wraps. Like if you ever had a garbage plate before, they put it in a wrap and it's just amazing.
Word. Favorite basketball memory?
Favorite basketball memory? Ooh, that's a tough one. I'd probably say making the Sweet 16 my freshman year of college. That was a pretty cool experience. When we beat Jim Calhoun, we were on ESPN for a couple of buckets we had, and it was pretty cool just to see a coaching legend like that and being able to beat him with all his knowledge and skill was a really cool experience.
And then funniest teammate?
Funniest teammate?
You can give multiple answers if you want.
Okay. Yeah, I'd probably say Jack Foley's probably up there for me. He's a really funny dude. And then probably Tucker Lesko at Hobart.
That's tough. All right. I'm excited for this starting five edition. So if you were a coach, 1 through 5, who would you pick? And this edition is going to be players you've played against in the Empire 8.
Geez, it feels like a lot of guys. I feel like I've been around for too long.
Yeah, that's yeah, a ton of guys. Sure. Especially because you probably get the best matchup every night. So you got a lot of experience against high-level players in the E8. So let's hear it.
All right. Starting a point guard. I'd probably go with Darius Hopkins. That guy, he just gives the ball, dude. Great defender, great hooper. I feel like he could score at any level. So I'll probably put him at the 1. Going at the 2, I'd probably put Ryan Gentile. Just super legit. Like, shoot the heck out of the ball. I mean, any type of shot, coming off screens, fades, curls, all that stuff. Also a great defender. At the 3... I'd probably put Stephen Gable from Naz. He was super good. Had a really good mid-range. He shoot the 3. He was pretty physical. At the four, I probably played Brendan Trapper. Super skilled. His mid-range was like something to watch, especially that jab fade. I feel like he never missed it. And then at the five, I'd probably put John Park just because of his shot blocking abilities and his ability to change the game defensively.
That's tough. So we're not – Dan Cook's not in that lineup?
I'll let someone else put me in their lineup. But for this one, I just – I think the best part about college basketball was, like, you get to try to take and piece together certain parts of other people's games to make your own better. And I think all those guys, you know, even though I didn't play like a lot of them, I would try to take certain parts of their game and try to just kind of add it to mine because I just respected their ability to hoop so much.
Nah, that's a fire story. Well, that's going to do it for another episode of Not Even D2. We appreciate your time. It's been a good conversation. Whenever you want to do this, we could more topics go again.
For sure. Yeah, I love it. I appreciate you guys having me on and would love to come back on again.
Yes, sir, bro.
Yes, sir. Appreciate you. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Not Even D2. If you haven't already, make sure to go follow all the socials at Not Even D2. You can catch every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. I'm your host, KJ Allison, and I'll see you next episode.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Colmena Seguros presenta una historia imparable.
Cuando uno de mis trabajadores sufrió un accidente en la empresa, sentí miedo. Pensaba en él, en su familia y en todo lo que podía pasar. Pero la verdad, ese miedo duró poco, porque Colmena Seguros estuvo a nuestro lado, guiándonos y acompañándonos para que la recuperación fuera más rápida. Hoy mi empresa sigue adelante, con la tranquilidad y respaldo de Colmena.
Colmena Seguros, la aseguradora de las empresas que no paran de salir adelante.
Vigilado Superintendencia Financiera de Colombia. Colmena Seguros, una empresa de Fundación Grupo Social.